Aalto University Podcast.
Green hydrogen is still more expensive than the carbon-intensive alternatives. So-called sector couplings or sector integrations are an important way to combat this. These come in varied shapes and sizes. A common to them is that they are best realized when they are also geographically close or even co-located. This is why we also talk about hydrogen valleys. But what are the valleys and the sector couplings, and what is needed to form them? I'm Mikko Heiskala, a visiting researcher at the Department of Industrial Engineering and Management at Aalto University, Finland. I research digital platforms and ecosystems. I was looking at how these could help hydrogen economy take off and what hydrogen valleys had to do with it in the Baltic Sea H2 Hydrogen Valley project. But to do that, I had to move away from my comfort zone of digital and bits to a world of atoms, molecules and electrons to understand the emerging hydrogen economy and what makes it tick. Join me on this journey in the Hydrogen Valley podcast. I've been hearing about sector couplings or sector integrations in the previous episodes and the Baltic Sea H2 Hydrogen Valley project a lot. I want to understand what they are and how they relate to hydrogen valleys better. So I first invited two experts from industry to discuss them with me. Heli Virkki, who is
Head of Gas Grids Hydrogen Valley and Customer Project Development.
And Simo Saunen-Virta, who is
heading ABB's H2 Springboard Ecosystem Program.
So what is a hydrogen valley? Could you explain the concept to me, Heli?
A hydrogen valley is a local or regional value chain of multiple hydrogen producers, end users, or refiners, storage operations, and interconnecting infrastructure. And I think one characteristic, very important characteristic of a hydrogen valley is that that there is a mutual benefit of those operations and those connected value chain roles.
So why are hydrogen valleys then considered important for the hydrogen economy?
Well, at least two points come into my mind immediately. And I think from the very early hydrogen economy building point of view, or that we are kind of creating something totally new from the scratch, we need to establish both hydrogen production and hydrogen consumption at the same time and kind of build that environment for those operations at the same time. So a hydrogen valley enables a kind of a micro environment to start this kind of new operational value chain. So it makes it possible for, let's say, to, in a sense, to pilot a new value chain and also test new technologies. And then I think it makes it possible to ramp up a new value chain in a smaller and more, let's say, secure, easier environment. Maybe then if you think about the kind of the business environment, so thinking that the hydrogen valley is consisting of multiple suppliers and multiple off-takers of hydrogen, so it also lowers the counterparty risk. So we talk about when we go then into industrial scale and into project development, so we talk about counterparty risk. So when you think about the bankability and the funding of these projects which are in that valley and along that value chain, so it also lowers the risk for the funding parties. Mm.
So there's kind of strengthening numbers.
Yeah, and I think hydrogen valley, we shouldn't just talk about the value chain, because it is actually, in the end, in an optimum way, it is a value network. So you are kind of interconnected in multiple ways, and it's not just the chain of value where everybody needs to be just connected to one party, but you can be producing for multiple parties, and you can also purchase your hydrogen, for instance, from multiple parties.
This also sounds a bit related to these the other concepts that we are discussing in this episode. So the sector integration and sector coupling. So Simo, what are those, and how are those then related to hydrogen valleys?
Yeah, well, let's ask first the question: what is sector coupling? So often it is referred to that you have different industry sectors and there are cross synergies. But now, if you really think concretely, if I'm a wind power producer, and I need to now sell my electricity, if I'm only in the electricity market, if I'm only producing the power there, currently the challenge is that the renewable energy is cannibalizing its own value. So when it's a very sunny and windy day, electricity price is negative. So I when I have the best opportunity to create value from my asset, actually, that the energy market provides negative valuation. Mm. So the way to then address that is that, okay, let's think about what are the other sectors that we could link to this. And okay, hydrogen comes very naturally there as a thought. So if I could now, instead of selling my electricity with the negative valuation, I could produce hydrogen and put it in a storage, and then later on sell it with the very high value for somebody who now wants to have this renewable hydrogen to produce, for instance, sustainable aviation fuel. Mm. The valuation is, of course, totally different. And then what is then the value of this sector coupling is that now that we can think about, through the hydrogen valley, linking these value streams in novel ways, we can create value that otherwise wouldn't be possible if we just stay within one value chain. And then there are other aspects is related to the side streams. So what are the kind of the side effects of our own operation? And again, hydrogen as an example, you produce out of your electricity, you produce hydrogen. What comes out? Okay, there comes hydrogen, but then you have oxygen coming out. If you could valorize the oxygen, it would be, of course, very interesting because it's a value that you didn't anticipate. And then side stream of heat in the country like Finland, that is highly valuable. And what is happening now elsewhere, we are stopping of burning something to produce heat for the winter time. And if I can now produce hydrogen, I can produce oxygen and I can produce heat, which all have their value. Mm. It, of course, is much better than just having the hydrogen.
So in Finland, we are using heat for district heating, and I also read about using it for industrial scale agricultural greenhouses potentially as well.
Those are examples. And then what is also possible is that new technology development is right now expanding those use cases. So what we are working very hard on is that how can we electrify the industrial high temperature heat? Mm. And there, okay, you can directly by using, for instance, a heat pump, you can produce industrial steam for this, for instance, drying purposes. So let's think about the hydrogen use case. So we produce now synthetic protein out of captured CO2 and then bacteria eating now hydrogen. That is actually solar foods having that use case. But what do they need to do in the end for the end product? They need to dry it. And that is a process where you need steam to produce the heat needed for that process. And then again, sector coupling, if I produce my hydrogen, I get a side stream of heat. And then instead of now creating that heat with some other source of energy, I can circulate that side stream to produce that that steam, of course, which creates a very nice business case of added value.
So it's not about this sector coupling and connection to hydrogen valleys. It's not just about the value network of hydrogen, but also these connected parties that could be connected through these sector coupling, sector integrations. And those could also be close by geographically in the same location or connected otherwise. Am I on the right track here?
Yes, yeah, sure. And I would still expand it into the services, which probably or perhaps currently do not exist, but they can emerge from the need of the new value chain. So, for example, new digital platforms, which are serving then, let's say, the data flow between these different roles. So, for example, the producers and the consumers and yeah, I think there are new services and new needs which are then kind of created along this kind of new integrated value chain.
Yeah, I think that is a very important point that hydrogen valleys, they could be an incubator for this new technology and new services that are needed for us to create the value. But then those services and those technology products and solutions, they are actually export products on their own merit. So we are working, for instance, in the Baltic Sea H2 on market model that would then be encapsulated in a digital platform. And then if somebody wants to create such a hydrogen valley where this these things are kind of similarly being looked for, then these platform technologies and the related services, they are very nice intangible deliverables that we can sell to other players.
It very much sounds like hydrogen valleys are a lot about different kind of integration, that there's this strength in numbers. We can connect the actors in different ways. So what needs to be integrated or connected for hydrogen valleys to form, to emerge? If we are thinking about technical or business connections or otherwise.
Well, I think we already kind of covered the evident industrial players. Certainly, well, I think biogenic CO2, of course, is let's say a new raw material or a new utility, or I don't know if you can call it utility, but at least a new raw material that comes into the play when talking about hydrogen economy. So I think definitely that is a new element. Maybe if you think about then still expanding kind of the physical players and over the services. So I think competence development is one thing, not maybe a physical integration, but something that is very vital for the emerging of the hydrogen valleys or the hydrogen economy. So certainly if you think about R&D needs, competence development needs, education. So I think that is the kind of non-concrete or competence-based elements that will fit into this integrated new value chain.
So this sounds like that hydrogen valleys and sector integrations are very much about actual integration of some activities. But what kind of infrastructure needs to be there that these different sector couplings, sector integrations, different connections between the side streams that are produced or the end products that are produced, them reaching the actors that would be needing them along these different kind of value networks? What needs to be there, and does it all need to be there in the beginning?
Well, I think what you need at minimum, you would need some electrical infrastructure to begin with. They are in pretty good shape here in Finland already. And then if I had a wish, I would like to see that, hydrogen infrastructure actually emerges rather sooner than later to enable truly the interchange of hydrogen as a energy carrier. So that would be nice. But then is it necessary from the beginning? I don't think, Heli, you have a better idea there. So what needs to be as a minimum?
Yeah, I think that in order to make the transition as effective time-wise as possible, so it's good to consider that what can be done simultaneously in different regions in Finland. I'm not talking about Finland. So because as you were pointing out that electricity is something kind of a prerequisite for the hydrogen economy or the hydrogen production at least. So then it remains to be questioned or that we ask the question that what should be transported or what needs to be transported? So is it then hydrogen or some other raw material like CO2 or then the end product? So which is kind of the availability of some certain raw material can be kind of directing the location where to operate this kind of hydrogen valley or integrated hydrogen refinery. So it might well be that we are directing the operations to be co-located with, for example, the biogenic CO2 point source, or then, for example, methane gas network, which is already existing, that the refining unit can then benefit from the end product logistics through the existing methane pipeline, for example, from Finland to, I don't know, to the Baltic countries.
Mm. Yeah, and then also you need to kind of consider what are the dynamic bottlenecks. So you mentioned the biogenic CO2, and today we have a lot of, here if you look at the case in Finland, we have a lot of that raw material in southeastern Finland. But the challenge there is that we can't get electricity there enough, so we can't build right now wind power there. And then on the other hand, if we have the northwestern part, Finland producing the electricity, we don't have grids to take that electricity there. So then the question becomes that, okay, what do I transport? Do I capture the CO2 and take it somewhere where I have electricity and hydrogen? Or do I take hydrogen to where I have the CO2? Or what is actually the optimum? And this will also change over time. Mm. So we have now very interesting new technologies being developed as well. So for instance, valorization of the CO2. So could you actually convert that to some intermediate product that you can then transport on truck transport, for instance. And then having such technology commercialized could change the picture.
And I think that also something that will still, let's say, remain to be seen that how it turns out, but is the storage of hydrogen. So it will definitely be needed, in my opinion, in some format or another. We are not having those, let's say, natural geological storages in our bedrock as in Central Europe, but we need to kind of build them on our own. But those will be needed, and we need to carefully study that how to position those in order for them to serve the energy system in the best possible way. But that is also a vital element for this whole system.
It is a vital element, and it's also absolutely a key resilience issue. Mm. So if you think about right now, we have fossil oil in our silos for the bad day. And now in the future, if we don't have it, and we won't have it. So then we will have ample supply of energy per se through the renewable electricity. But that being intermittent, then what is the long-term storage for that? I just saw a very interesting article by Tesla, and they were anticipating that actually the long-term storage would be hydrogen-based.
You mentioned a lot of things that need to be aligned or could be aligned. What would be the first or most promising sites or group of companies to get these kind of hydrogen valleys ongoing?
Well, I think if we think time-wise, I would be putting my money on the current industrial users of grey hydrogen, so who are already having the assets to use hydrogen, and they have currently the need in their operations to use hydrogen. And well, hydrogen is hydrogen chemically, even though it would be kind of produced from fossil resources or from renewable electricity. So the threshold to switch into green hydrogen would be and will be the lowest possible for the existing industries. And we do have significant users of hydrogen in Finland. So, for example, in fuel production industry, as well as in steel industry. So I would consider them as the kind of the gate openers for the hydrogen usage, for the green hydrogen usage. Mm.
Yeah. These locations also are nice kind of embryotic hydrogen valleys, because there are often at times multiple players on the same industrial site that could even be sharing some common infrastructure already. Mm. And there could even be like an industrial park operator company taking care of some common utilities, whatever. So there is this type of also cultural grounds for building collaboration.
That's a very good point. You mentioned the existing industrial parks. So even though those wouldn't be kind of currently utilizing hydrogen yet or green hydrogen. So I think those will be very good environment for new companies within hydrogen economy to be located because, as you mentioned, so other utilities are there and the kind of industrial infrastructure is there and the logistics infrastructure is there. Usually these sites are also in the proximity of ports. And I think that in terms of the global derivative market, so the vicinity to ports is also very important. And those we have plenty of those in Finland.
What would be then the main barriers for hydrogen valleys to emerge or to be created?
I think just the lack of time and resources to develop that. And if you think about it, let's again be concrete. So I'm a developer and I'm developing now my, say, ammonia production plant. I will have busy time just making that thing fly on its own, calculating all the business risks, trying to secure offtake for my end product, negotiating with suppliers for technology, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I wouldn't have time to mingle with potential other parties for whom could I provide some side stream value or from whom could I receive some hydrogen for my production. So often at times it is just lack of resources and just, let's say, dedicated parties to take this forward. We talked about the industrial parks. There can be kind of that if you have already existing collaborations, if you have existing partners, there is even a, could be kind of a industrial park operator company. There could be basis to do that. But then if I'm just standalone developer, it is going to be tough to pull it off just on your own.
So does this need some kind of a new neutral matchmaker or other party that could maybe connect these time-constrained players?
Yeah, I think that's a very important role that we are currently missing when we are now starting to develop this new economy. So in my personal opinion, I think that we do need a matchmaker or a market maker to connect these value chain ends to each other and to kind of create the visibility. Another thing I think that looking at the development of hydrogen economy from a Finnish point of view, so I think it's really important that we create an atmosphere also of, in a sense, an atmosphere of urgency so that we wouldn't be standing still in a waiting mode because this is also a kind of a timely game. So the first deals, which will be then made in terms of derivatives, hydrogen. So I think the first movers will get the good deals and they will kind of stand out. And the front row seats are now kind of dealt out. And Finland should not be kind of standing in the waiting line and thinking that let's wait until somebody else does this first and maybe makes some mistakes that we would like to avoid. So I think that we should have the courage to utilize our good competitive advantages and to go forward very boldly.
I thought that the matchmaking was already in your mandate, isn't it?
Well, at least we have taken it as to be within our mandate and we have, of course, we have started to facilitate it. And maybe what I was thinking is that when this all becomes operative, more kind of goes forward, so maybe we also need an official matchmaker or a operator or an organization. So I think that is something that it would be good to agree together on a national level.
Right.
So for hydrogen valleys to form, it would be beneficial to have this kind of a matchmaker, more urgent attitude, urgency in the, you know, getting things done and getting things started and not just waiting. Because I've understood also that many hydrogen projects are industrial scale projects and that means they take a long time. So you, I guess you would be learning much more quicker if you are doing it and not from the just looking from afar when somebody else does a long-term project.
I think that is coming back to the challenge that Heli pointed out. Yes, industrial projects traditionally, and that's the whole industry tradition, they have been long game. You plan for 5 years, then you have an investment pre-study for another 5 years, and then you build something, and then you run the thing for 50 years. So that's been kind of the attitude. But now look at kind of what's going on. If you think about renewable energy, how it scales, it's absolutely exponential. It goes kind of on a vertical up, how much you produce that. And it's standardized, it's modular, it's scalable. It's actually industrial logic on a totally different way, like the heavy process energy intensive industry has ever been. And now hydrogen is actually following the same curve. We don't just see it here in Western world. So if you go to China and look at kind of what are the signs on the wall when it comes to hydrogen developments, it's going to be following the same type of a pattern. And then what it requires, yes, it requires that we need to have the courage to take those first steps, accepting the fact that there will be mistakes. That is important. You can't kind of secure it because you are pioneering something. And then the second thing is that, okay, once you get your pilot going, and already then when you're doing it, you need to think about industrial scaling. So from the beginning, build those solutions in such a way that they are not one-offs. Think about standardization. Think about kind of where can I cut all the slack out in the process. And then that's the only way kind of how you can make this happen.
And talking about the scaling up, so when we talk about infrastructure and we kind of look at the local Hydrogen Valley level, so of course we need the local infrastructure in order to transmit the gases or the raw materials or the end products. But then when we look at the scaling up and the market expansion, so then we need the national and also the cross-border connections, the infrastructures which expand beyond our country's borders or our nation's borders. And that's about the kind of related to the fast scaling up also, the market expansion and the potential to for the companies to be directly on the international market and also connected to the de-risking element of the off-takers and the suppliers. So I hear this a lot from the project developers and the companies who are developing their hydrogen production or consumption, that they are expressing it very clearly that they want to utilize the possibility to be on the European level market at the same time when they open their valves.
Right. So the conclusion is that we would need to actually work all the fronts simultaneously. So don't go in a kind of a traditional waterfallish thing that, okay, we do first this small scale demonstrator here, and then we take the results out of that, and then we go back to chambers to optimize the concepts, and then we come with the scale-up project, and then eventually, once everything works perfectly, then we would look for international markets.
I think that's really the conclusion, that we need to work on multiple levels at the same time and have the confidence that it really we will reach the big goal.
This kind of brought a thought into my mind. Solar has benefited greatly, I've understood, from this radically different level of decentralization, at least in use cases, than many other energy industries. You can install solar panels in your home and get electricity and energy there. This Hydrogen Valley sounded then a bit more bigger concepts and more centralized concepts, at least to my ears. Is this then the way to go, or should we look at this kind of a radically different scale of things here?
Well, talking about solar, so I can raise the concept of these hybrid power parks or hybrid parks that where the power production for hydrogen production comes from multiple sources, so that there is both wind power and then solar power, which are then kind of balancing each other in terms of power production, in terms of weather also, and then connected to different energy storage systems. So I think this is already kind of an existing industrial concept, or kind of going towards industrial concept, and we already have that those kind of demonstrations in Finland.
Yeah, I wouldn't believe kind of that I have my, okay, even though I have a solar power plant on my roof at home, I wouldn't probably to have my electrolyzer and fuel cell there. Probably not. But then actually this concept of this hybrid renewables park, it's going to be very, very much decentralized still compared to kind of that, okay, we have one big power plant in the whole country and then we produce everything there. It's going to be numerous such hybrid parks out there. And then if you look at, again, kind of what is the concrete benefit with renewables? It didn't matter, or actually when I had my fossil burning power plant and I designed it to certain power rating, it would do that power rating quite constantly. But then renewables, they have a peak power which is coming now, that one sunny day, 1 hour midday a year. So in a way, kind of you would have just few days, few hours where you have that maximum power rating coming out of your park. And then most of the time it is kind of 20, 30, 40% of that maximum power. And then if you think about kind of from electrical infrastructure point of view, I now need to buy a substation there to connect that park to the electricity system. And I need to size my network connection. It need to be sized by what the power is that I want to feed in. So now if I take it to that one maximum hour, I would have a huge overinvestment in my transformers and stuff that I need for the electrical connection. Whereas if I then combine, for instance, a certain amount of that could be converted to hydrogen, a smaller electricity connection would suffice because I could continuously be kind of feeding that into the grid. So from that point of view, it opens up totally new opportunities and it's decentralized.
It just came to my mind that talking about sector integration and these hybrid parks. So I know at least one region where there is this kind of a piloting environment where there is both industry, which is getting the electricity from these two different renewable electricity sources, so solar and wind, but then they are also serving the local community. So basically the households will benefit out of that. So it's really kind of a local sector integration between the industry and the kind of regular citizens.
So what kind of lessons can be drawn from the current hydrogen valleys and that we have, and replicate them elsewhere, or to scale the existing ones?
Yeah, I think the learning we can take is that the current hydrogen valleys that have been developed in Europe haven't gone anywhere. So I think that's the first learning. So we need to get real with this. So it's not kind of, if we have nice brochures and we have a demo electrolyzer and then a couple of refueling station buses taking the hydrogen, that's not yet the hydrogen valley. So I think the approach that we want to take here in Finland would be about that, now that we then use the hydrogen valleys for real, let's start from where we already have hydrogen relevant. We talked about that we have industry that is using today fossil hydrogen. How can we then integrate renewable hydrogen generation there? And then also looking at how do we at scale utilize the side streams? How do we build the synergies? And then how we through this collaboration make all those business cases bankable? Because right now the challenge, I think the key thing or key value that we can create with Hydrogen Valley and the collaboration there is that we can make all those business cases, or let's say most of the business cases that the individual developers are taking forward bankable, or the financing kind of come through because we can now create synergies through the collaboration. And then I would look really to not kind of fancy demos, but rather real things. And the merit of that or the metric would be that when we have the first couple of cases that actually publish their final investment decision enabled, then we are on the right track.
Yeah, I could add from, let's say, from the very pragmatic point of view. So compared to the, as Simo was referring to, these certain European so-called hydrogen valleys. So I think we have very nice environments or regions in Finland who have gone forward, as said, going out from the regional, let's say, existing competencies and needs. So building upon what is already there. And that might very well differ from region to region. And I think that that complementary thinking, that not all the valleys need or should be the same. So I think that's one key thing. And then another thing is that I think all the valleys or all the effectively developing and forward-going valleys, they need a central point or this kind of developmental coordinator or development coordinator who is kind of a neutral party that can unite the different industrial actors and the other stakeholders and who has kind of all the strings in their hands and knows the direction, builds the roadmap and sees through that that everybody's kind of aligning their operations according that roadmap. And there are certain targets that are being defined and everybody's kind of going towards the same goal. And I think we have good examples in Finland of those development coordinators that are doing this job.
For that kind of actors, what would be the first key steps to kickstart a hydrogen valley?
I think it would be very important to identify that what is the region's, let's say, economical basis? What is it built upon currently? Mm-hmm. Where does the value come from that certain area at this time? Mm-hmm. And how can those operations, how can that competence be somehow integrated and utilized within hydrogen economy? So not kind of starting from scratch. It can also be some very beneficial raw material sources or existing industry or some technology competence. Or I think it can be different things, but let's say that utilizing something which is already there and thriving from what you already are good at.
I find a case in the point looking at how Jyväskylä has now been developing that. And okay, what is Jyväskylä known for? They are known for their rally and then having Toyota Motorsports rally team there developing their cars. So there's been this type of mobility-related competency there. And now around that, they have now created a very vibrant forward-going capability. Whereas if you then go to, say, some industrial hub where we have existing, take another example, now Kilpilahti, or then go to Kokkola, there are certain industrial heritages that are kind of very strongly there. And so you have to start from there. And what are the things that you have as natural starting points?
So I guess in many, many areas, many in industries, there's something there that can be utilized, bringing these more connections, more sector integrations, because those offer a lot of opportunities for creating more value, capturing more value and get the big ball rolling, and then starting to connect maybe to these other valleys, which then creates this more bigger hydrogen economy as well.
Yeah, I think also one important realization in the hydrogen economy is that quite many parts of the new hydrogen economy is already established. So we don't need to build everything from scratch. We have those bits and pieces already there. We have renewable electricity production. We have electrolyzer technologies. We have a chemical industry, fuel industry, steel industry, fertilizer industry. They have their processes proven and they have been up and running for tens of years. So we don't need to make everything from scratch. So I don't want to say we just integrate them, because I know that it's complex, but we have already quite much.
Yeah, and you didn't mention one thing that I'm actually personally very happy about, and that is that what has surprised me in the last year is how much we have in our universities actually related research, and then embryos that can become startups and scale-ups. So in that sense, kind of, when you take really inventory of what all we have basically all the ingredients. Now it's just a matter of putting them together in these concrete contexts, where Hydrogen Valley is good kind of a metaphor for what is now concrete joint development.
What one misconception about Hydrogen Valleys would you, Heli, like to clear up?
Well, maybe I would like to revert back to what we already discussed and what actually Simo brought up regarding the existing Hydrogen Valleys, maybe in some parts of Europe. So a Hydrogen Valley is not something which is built organically or which is just created by itself. I mean that if a Hydrogen Valley doesn't emerge from co-located developers or co-located hydrogen-related actors or activities, but it needs to be developed and steered and directed, that there are the relevant components are there. So I think that we should think that that a Hydrogen Valley is something that we create and we develop, and they can be developed for different purposes, but they always need to have these certain rules that how these different operators are kind of how they benefit from each other and what are the interlinkages.
So just having the pieces out there is not enough. You need to do something with them and by somebody.
Exactly. And there needs to be a logic why certain pieces need to be brought together and not just any piece.
How about you, Simo? What misconception about sector integration would you like to clear up? Something that you hear a lot.
I'm not sure I hear it a lot, but I think misconception that it just happens magically now that we have identified that opportunity. That is a misconception. And now I mean about that we could balance the electricity grid with hydrogen production. We could utilize the waste heat or excess heat coming out of electrolyzers automatically to dry up our protein powders, etc. You have to very consciously actually look for that well, how do you create the synergies? And then also it also requires oftentimes a new way of working, because when you talk about sector integration, it's not in your power. So if the other guy who is on the other sector that you would want to integrate to, if they don't see the same value and they don't agree that this is how we should together bake the bigger cake, then you don't, even if you had the opportunity, technically it wouldn't materialize. So it takes a new kind of a ecosystemic way of working, new working culture as well. I don't know, kind of, are they common misconceptions, but I think they are some hurdles that we would need to, kind of things that we would need to change, how we need to build up these connections in the future so that we can take maximum benefit of them.
A culture of cooperation, active building of those cooperations or relationships.
So in Hydrogen Valley, we should be very, very keen and active and innovative about how we can create the new models.
Thank you for this interesting discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
After my discussion with Heli and Simo, I wanted a research perspective into the impact of sector couplings for the green hydrogen economy. So I went to talk to Kimmo Karhu, who is a
assistant professor at the Department of Industrial Engineering and Management at Aalto University.
You've been building and developing a model of the hydrogen economy in Finland in the Baltic Sea Hydrogen Valley project. What does the model cover?
So the model essentially models the whole hydrogen value chain. It models every step in the value chain and what are the needed inputs and what are then the outputs of every step. And everything starts from the hydrogen production. So green hydrogen uses renewable electricity as an input. Then this produced green hydrogen can be used to replace gray hydrogen in industry. For example, instead of gray hydrogen, we can use green hydrogen in the oil refining process. The other very potential big impact use for green hydrogen is in steel making. So we can use green hydrogen instead of coal-based coks to iron green steel, which can then save a huge amount of CO2 emissions when steel is made with the help of green hydrogen. Then the green hydrogen in our model, of course, it's not necessary that it is used in Finland, but it can also export it to other countries. For example, Germany, most likely in the future, there will be a huge demand for green hydrogen. The other use for green hydrogen is then that it can be used as an input to produce so-called hydrogen derivatives. Main derivatives that can be made out of green hydrogen are e-methane, e-methanol, and green ammonium. E-methane is essentially its replacement for natural gas. E-methanol are so-called e-fuels. E-methane and e-methanol, then as an additional input, they require CO2 that they can be made. Then third derivative for green hydrogen is green ammonium. And it can then essentially replace fossil-based ammonium in many industries. For example, we can do fertilizers from green hydrogen instead of gray hydrogen, which again can then globally save massively CO2 emissions.
What kind of data are you using in the model?
So in the current version, we use the data for Finland. We use data from EK, the Confederation of Finnish Industries. They have collected data about green investments in Finland. So we get numbers, for example, for planned hydrogen facilities. We get investments related to carbon capture and so forth. And then we can extrapolate those numbers. Usually the numbers are, planned investments are up until something like 2031 to 2032. And we then extrapolate those investments. We assume similar investment rate up until 2050. It is a pretty optimistic assumption, but we just in the current version model want to see that what would be the maximum potential of what we see now in Finland.
And what is that potential? What does the model tell you?
So the model when we run with the EK data, so the first result is that the electricity will become a constraint. In the model we also use Fingrid, Gasgrid data, a scenario of how the renewable electricity production will develop in Finland. And that scenario predicts that by 2040, Finland will produce roughly 192 terawatt hours per year renewable electricity, additional renewable electricity that can be used for example, for hydrogen production. And that actually becomes a bottleneck. So the model can't invest that much into the hydrogen facilities, what the EK data very optimistically would predict. The electricity becomes a bottleneck, and then we will produce only limited amount of hydrogen production.
Well, green hydrogen, a hydrogen economy, has been touted as a savior of slowing down global warming by reducing carbon dioxide emissions. What does the model tell you about that, or can you model that?
Yes, certainly. So when we calculate the whole potential of hydrogen production and different derivatives, we can then estimate that if that those hydrogen products are used in industry or somewhere else, the derivatives, for example, in e-fuels in the maritime sector and so forth. If they are used instead of the fossil-based products, we can avoid certain amount of CO2 emissions. And when we calculate that, we end up with the number that the Finnish production of hydrogen and its derivatives, if those will fully replace the fossil-based use, either in Finland or somewhere else, for example, in Europe, we can avoid roughly same amount of CO2 what Finland currently, as a whole, as a nation, emits CO2 per year. And it's actually a little bit more than that. So there is a huge potential to save CO2 just by green hydrogen production in Finland.
You also said that electricity becomes a bottleneck. And I assume that's the model just uses here, that the consumption of electricity for hydrogen production. In Finland, there's also been a lot of talk about data centers and data center investments and big investments related to that. Does the model take those into account?
Yes, since we have the nice data from EK about also the planned data center investments, so we similarly extrapolate that data center investment rate up until 2050. And the model kind of shows that if we would continue this very fast-paced investments on data centers, that essentially will consume roughly one-third of that renewable electricity. So in a way, it cuts one-third of the hydrogen or derivative production in Finland. So which also means that roughly one-third of CO2 that could have been avoided by producing green hydrogen or derivatives, that's kind of a lost if the data centers are produced too aggressively.
I discussed sector couplings and sector integration with Heli Virkki and Simo Saunavirta earlier in the episode. And you mentioned that the model, takes those into account as well. So what can you say about the sector couplings with your model, or how does it take those into account?
Yes, yeah, so in a way, generally we think that sector couplings are the way how electricity market is coupled with the other market. So in a way, hydrogen as such is enabling this kind of a big coupling between the electricity market to other markets, for example, green steel production or the maritime sector. But if we look at the hydrogen economy more closely, we have another type of sector couplings. So we have both sector couplings from the supply side and then towards demand side. So from the supply side, when we produce the certain kind of derivatives, the e-methane and e-methanol, they require CO2 as a supply just to make them. And that is one important sector coupling. Then the other sector coupling towards the demand side is the heat. So essentially, hydrogen production produces a lot of heat as a side stream. The electrolysis such a process that it produces heat, and that heat can be sold to, for example, to district heating market. So that's a second important sector coupling, which then can bring additional income for the hydrogen producers and can make the investment more profitable. So it's a kind of important from that perspective.
Let's discuss that waste heat in a bit more detail. Finland is a pretty cold country, at least part of the year. So what does the model say about this waste heat as a potential output to district heating and such?
Yeah, so with this like optimistic model, we now have the amount of waste heat that is produced is so much that we can easily kind of fulfill all the district heating demand in Finland. It's in that scale, it's a small number. So in a way, if we really want to utilize the waste heat from the growing hydrogen economy, we need to come up with some other uses for the heat. Heat is also used in process industries, but the problem there is that the process industries, they require high temperature heat, whereas the electrolysis produces low temperature heat. We look forward there for some technology development that could we somehow efficiently turn some of that low heat into the high temperature heat, and then it could be used in process industries. That would, again, make the equation easier for hydrogen investors.
Then you mentioned the carbon dioxide emissions and capturing those and its integration into the hydrogen economy. So what does the model tell us about that, or can tell us?
Yeah, so as we model all the inputs and outputs in the value chain, so when we produce the certain type of derivatives, so e-methane and e-methanol, those essentially actually need CO2 as an input. We need CO2 as a supply to produce those. And in the model, we also take from this EK data the planned carbon capture projects. So essentially, we can capture the carbon from Finnish pulp industry, essentially from the pipes of that industry. It produces quite a lot of CO2, and then if we can capture it, we can use it to produce the derivatives. And the model roughly shows that with the current production, we will have enough, in a way, CO2 supply, the biogenic CO2 from Finnish pulp industry. So it quite nicely matches the supply and the demand matches each other.
So no need to come up with more technically difficult ways to capture carbon dioxide in Finland, like, I don't know, from the cars or whatever.
Yeah, that, of course, yeah, it is better that if we can capture it from industries directly, and we don't need to try to capture it from the air. Yeah. But it's kind of the model shows that with that production, we are hitting the limits. Mm. So if we want to still grow the hydrogen economy bigger, then we need to start thinking that would there be some other sources for CO2? It can be that we capture from the air, or maybe we get it from some other countries if it's feasible to transfer it. But yeah, that we haven't studied yet.
You mentioned a couple of constraints that you have modeled. What about these possibilities and opportunities that the hydrogen economy can give the society? What the model tells about those?
Yeah, that's of course the whole point of why we are trying to transition to hydrogen economy, is that we can use it for green transition, and we can cut down the CO2 emissions. And we can, of course, calculate that potential with the model. Now that the model calculates the amount of hydrogen and different derivatives that are produced, we can assume that hydrogen and the derivatives, they can be either used in Finland to clean up the Finnish industries, or they can be exported to Europe and can be used there. And by using either the hydrogen or the derivatives in some sectors, we can think that it replaces fossil-based products. Mm. And then with that information, we can calculate that what is the potential of CO2 emissions that we can avoid by using the green hydrogen-based products instead. And that full potential with now the production in Finland, so the full potential of CO2 avoidance is roughly the same amount what Finland currently as a country emits CO2 annually. It's actually a little bit more. So there is a huge potential to avoid CO2 with hydrogen economy.
So Kimmo, what would be one takeaway that you would like to leave the listeners with related to hydrogen economy and the model?
So like we have now discussed, so there is a huge potential in green hydrogen economy, but the current model we have is an optimistic model that assumes certain amount of investments, but in real life, those investments, they need to be profitable to happen, and it seems that there's quite a lot of things on that front that needs to happen before those investments actually really become profitable and the hydrogen economy kicks off. So it's not an easy transition. As a society, I think we need to really think that what could we do to advance the green hydrogen economy? For example, what kind of policies we put towards data centers, which eat one third of the hydrogen potential. The other very important factor in realizing hydrogen economy is that the CO2 emission pricing for the competing sectors Once that starts kicking in and the other sectors get the extra, or they are caused extra cost from emitting the CO2, then that turns the equation better for the hydrogen economy. So some of these big fundamentals need to get right before we get the economy going, the green hydrogen economy going.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hydrogen Valley podcast. In the next episode, I discuss the societal impacts and acceptability of green hydrogen projects. My expert guest is doctoral researcher Essi Laitinen from VTT Technical Research Center of Finland. Essi researches the social and justice aspects of the green energy transition in the Baltic Sea H2 Hydrogen Valley project. Please subscribe, rate and share the podcast. It helps others find the show as well. And you get more bang for your tax euros. We gratefully acknowledge the financial support from the Department of Industrial Engineering and Management at Aalto University for the production of this podcast. Baltic Sea H2 Hydrogen Valley project in turn is co-funded by the European Union through the Clean Hydrogen Partnership and its members. The podcast tune song is Limit 70 by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com and is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0 license. This episode of the Hydrogen Valley podcast was scripted, recorded, edited, mixed and hosted by me, Mikko Heiskala. Till next time.